Hello and welcome to the last of the parts of our sleep module, and it's called Supporting Clients to Achieve Restful Sleep. This is where we tie it all together. This is where the rubber meets the road, so to speak. This is where we're going to talk about how do you help these people? How do you even start with helping the people that come in and say, I know how important sleep is for my health, but I just can't sleep. It's not a matter of they're not going to bed in time. It's not a matter of they're working too hard. It's that they get into the bed and they just can't fall asleep. And if you've ever had even a single sleepless night, you can relate and you can empathize, because I have had very few sleepless nights in my days, but the nights I have, I lay there and go, I cannot believe people go through this night after night. It's horrible. It's just a horrible feeling. And part of it is it self-propagating. So you lay down to go to sleep, you're optimistic, you're all set to fall asleep, and you don't, and you don't, and you don't. And the more you lay there, and maybe the reason is because you've got stress on your mind, you get more stress because you can't fall asleep. So now you have this new thing to worry about, and it just self-propagates. And it's really hard for people to just let go. In some cases, the reasons for the lack of restful sleep have to do with emotional stuff. They're too stressed out. Their mind is racing. They've had history of past abuse or trauma in the middle of the night, and there's fear there. And so their cortisol levels are up way too high for them to be able to get a good night's sleep. In other cases, there are biochemical reasons for it. There could be an imbalance of certain nutrients, and we're going to talk about those in this part of the module. In addition, it could be excesses of certain chemicals, imbalances in hormones. It could be any number of things that get in the way of that person. So we're going to talk about this from a variety of different perspectives, and we're going to see what we can do to help you to help them to get a better night's sleep. So before we go ahead and get started, I want to make sure that you are aware that we are presenting information that's educational in nature. And when you're working with people with sleep issues, especially those who come in and they're on Ambien and other kind of medications for sleep, that you are really clear with them that what you're doing is not medical advice, that if they need any adjustments in their medication, they need to go see their medical doctor. But what you're going to do is try to get to the heart of it, to really understand what the underlying factors are, and there may be a number of them that are interfering. And it's from research and education and clinical experience, but it's definitely not medical advice. We're not diagnosing and we're not treating. So let's do an overview of some of the things that can help enhance sleep. And there are more, but we're going to go through all of these today. So getting outside in the morning light, and I've got some research that supports that, but there's also some controversy about that as well. Sedative herbs before bed, and there's a number of them, and they seems that those sedative herbs tend to work best when you take them within a half an hour of going to bed. Scheduling a 3-day sleep vacation, there's actually some research that supports how important that can be to help people to get better sleep once they are back off the 3-day sleep vacation. You might think, well, how can I get them to do a 3-day sleep vacation when they can't sleep? We'll talk about that as well. And then having them sleep in as dark an environment as possible. There's more, but I categorize them into these four areas. So getting outside in the morning sun. It's postulated that getting outside in the morning sun triggers a balance of hormones. It triggers the melatonin to get into the daytime rhythm and cortisol to get into the daytime rhythm. And so when the melatonin is in the system and then you get outside in the early morning sun, it gives the trigger to the pineal gland to calm it down. On the other hand, cortisol is affected. And the theory is that it balances the circadian rhythm throughout the day. But the studies have been kind of interesting. So let's talk about a few of the studies. There was one study, and it was office workers, and it was to check the effects of the daytime natural light exposure. So not explicitly morning, but it's the exposure of them throughout the day. 27 of them were in windowless offices, and 22 were in windowed offices. And they were evaluated by a couple of techniques that are known to be effective in evaluating the quality of somebody's sleep, the Pittsburgh Sleep Quality Index, and actigraphy. And the results were pretty clear in this study that those who worked in an area where there were windows received 173% more white light during the day, and they slept an average of 45 minutes more per night. So that's kind of interesting. And what that says is not just for people who work in offices, but the idea of getting outside during the day, having your shades up. I walk into some people's houses and they have their shades drawn all the time. They have their blinds down all the time. And that's not a good idea, right? So this really reinforced the need for the good daylight so that the body can actually differentiate between night and day really easily. So another study looked at the effects of bright light on cortisol levels. And that's related to that get outside in the morning sun idea. When we read things in various popular adrenal fatigue books, they'll talk about how it's really important to get out in the morning sun. And that you get out in the morning sun, it helps to balance the levels of cortisol, which can help it to be in the right amount at the beginning of the day, end of the day, so that you have energy during the day and can sleep at night. But there were mixed studies. There were mixed results with that. Some studies showed that exposure to bright light early in the day was causing cortisol levels to go down. Some of them were causing them to go up, and some of them were meant to be the same. So this particular study was done with the idea of trying to do it in a very controlled fashion to see what were the effects of bright light exposure on cortisol level. So they took 20 healthy men and women, and they studied them for 9 to 10 days. Now, you have to understand, these people must have gotten paid something, or they must have been really desperate, because they locked them up in a room, basically, controlled for 9 to 10 days. They got to sleep there, and they had exposure to bright light, and the bright light was at a 10,000 lux bright light, and that exposure was for 6.7 hours in a day. And they exposed them during the rising and the falling cortisol rhythm areas. So what happened was they found that during the rising and descending phases of cortisol rhythm, it reduced the cortisol levels. But at other times when cortisol was low, it reduced the cortisol levels, but it also didn't raise the cortisol levels. So this is an interesting situation, because we have read in a lot of popular adrenal books and popular blog articles, and it's almost like assumed that when you get exposed to bright light first thing in the morning, it's a good thing to do for the adrenals. Well, as it turns out, these people that were exposed, it made a difference as to how long they were exposed and during what phase. So it was postulated that because it was during the phase that it was either at its close to its peak going up or close to its peak on the way down, that there was a particular pathway, what's called a multisynaptic pathway, meaning several nerves were involved, starting in the retina, going to the SCN, to the adrenal glands, and then stimulating the adrenal glands to slow down the production of cortisol. That particular pathway, they are postulating, bypasses the HPA, the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. So it's a different pathway. And when we know that high levels of cortisol can be dangerous in people who have high levels of cortisol, right? And we know that during the sympathetic dominant phase of the adrenal burnout, dysfunction, whatever you want to call it, that we have folks who have high levels of cortisol, and it's causing them to put on weight around the middle. It's causing them to have higher blood pressure, faster heart rate, things that aren't necessarily good, shut down digestion. So by exposing people in the morning or during the bright light periods to the bright light, having it reduce the cortisol can be a good thing, right? If somebody's in a stage one adrenal fatigue where they're producing too much cortisol. But what about folks who are fatigued? What about folks who they're not making enough cortisol? Well, the good news is that it doesn't reduce the cortisol levels in those people. But the other news is it may not be really affecting them as much as we think. So going out in the bright light might be something that we're more having people do for stage one adrenal fatigue, where they're hyper. And how does that affect sleep? Why are we going on about this? Well, it's those people that have the most difficulty with sleep as a result of cortisol problems. So wrapping it around is that this method of going out in the first morning sun definitely has an impact on sleep. It definitely helps to improve sleep. May not be as good for just general adrenal fatigue as we would have thought, but it's definitely good for sleep because, number one, it is going to lower the cortisol levels and help the person to have lower cortisol during the night when it starts to rise. You know, a lot of people in the middle of the night, it starts to rise too quickly, and that's when having the bright light earlier affects it. But also the effect it has on melatonin. So when you have that exposure to the bright light, the melatonin naturally goes down first thing in the morning, and then it's more likely to come up as it's supposed to later in the evening, and helps with sleep. So let's move on, and let's take a look at sedative herbs and supplements before bed. Studies have shown that for most of these, we're going to see that the person does best with them about, you know, a half an hour to an hour before bed. You can also repeat some of them right before bed. It just depends. And we're going to go through in detail each one of these. So we've got the herbs like lemon balm, valerian, passion flower, chamomile, kava kava. And then we have hormones like melatonin, which can be taken orally. And there's foods that can support it. There's tryptophan and 5-HTP. Those are 5-HTP is a form of tryptophan, 5-hydroxytryptophan. And then there's other amino acid L-theanine, and then there's vitamin B3 and magnesium, and there's a few others. So I ran out of room on the page, but we'll go through each of them in detail. And then here's the thing about sleep vacations. You may be thinking, how could you get somebody to take a sleep vacation when they're having trouble sleeping? Well, you get them to get 12 hours of sleep, or just even if they're not sleeping, they get to be in bed. No stimulants. No coffee, no alcohol. Power down all the electronics and remove all the clutter from the bedroom. Have them listen to relaxing music, take an aromatherapy bath before they go to bed, and have them know that even if they don't fall asleep, that this will be doing them a lot of good. So they can meditate, they can tap, they can do heart math, even if they don't fall asleep. But the trick is to make sure that they stay awake and alert during the day. So a lot of people who don't get enough sleep at night, they're walking around like zombies during the day. And at any opportunity they get to sit and relax, they end up, falling asleep. So you have them plan for low stress activities, no work, but things where they can just hang out and keep themselves alert, take a walk, a hike, read a book, play games. Go to see a movie, maybe, maybe not, because I know some people who just fall asleep during movies because it's a downtime. And then as bedtime approaches, they're going to be mentally and physically ready for a long and restorative sleep, and they need to work with themselves on this. So when you can get somebody to actually plan out this 3-day sleep vacation, what you're going to see is that their pattern of sleep afterwards tends to improve. If nothing else, it helps with adrenal function. And that can help with sleep as well. So the next one is to sleep in as dark an environment as possible. When the eyes, the pineal gland through the eyes, is exposed to light, it stimulates the decrease or the sedation or the inhibition of melatonin. What's melatonin? We'll talk about that in a little bit. I'll talk to you about what that is and how it works and how we can stimulate it through food and through nutrients. But when someone is exposed to bright light, like say we're sitting at a computer right before bed, or all the lights in the house are on, out, you know, traveling about somewhere at a concert, wherever you might be, at that time, that's going to stimulate the pineal gland to say, well, we're still in daytime, don't produce melatonin. So when you can get the environment as dark as possible, when you can sleep in as dark an environment and lead up to sleep with some activities which keep the house, the room, et cetera, in as low a light as possible, it's going to increase the level of melatonin. And when people are exposed to unnatural light cycles, it oftentimes increases the risk of depression, like people who are on shift schedules or, you know, doing the party hardy late at night and then sleeping during the day, an opposite rhythm. that can actually increase the risk of depression because of the effects it has on neurotransmitters. So some of the supplements, the things we're going to look at in more detail, melatonin, sedative herbs, essential oils, adaptogens, amino acids, vitamins, and minerals. And we have a section of the presentation on each of these subjects.